Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to CFL Energia third quarter 2015 earnings results conference call. Today we have here with us the executive Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr., CEO of CPFL Energia, and other officers of the company. This call is being broadcasted simultaneously through the internet and the website www.cpfl.com.br/IR, where this presentation can be available for download. I would like to inform you that all participants are in listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the presentation, there will be a Q&A session when further instructions will be provided. In case any of you need further instructions during this conference call, please ask the operator by dialing *0. I would like to remind you that this conference call is being recorded. Before proceeding, we would like to mention that any forward-looking statements that are made during this conference call related to CPFL Energia's assumptions, management, and information currently available in the company are assumptions of the company as well as information currently available. Forward-looking statements are not guaranteed of performance because they involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of CPFL Energia and therefore could lead to results that differ materially from those expressed on such forward-looking statements. Now I would like to turn the floor over to Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr. You may proceed, sir. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, investors and analysts. I would like to thank you very much for participating on our conference call for the third quarter results. I would like to start on slide number 3, and I will elaborate further in other slides. We had a sales drop in the concession area of DISCOs in all segments, mostly aggravated by the industrial segment with 7.4%. And then I will refer to investments. This quarter, we invested 219 million reals, totaling almost 1 billion reals year-to-date in the first 9 months. One important highlight is the conclusion of CPFL Piratininga's tariff revision in October 2015, and for the first time since we started promoting tariff revisions, there was an increase of 5.3% on Parcel B. We will also elaborate on the subject, and this not only reinstates the improvement on the fourth cycle recognized by indicators that remunerate investments, but also in terms of investments that have been acknowledged by ANEEL. It's also important to refer to the maintenance of our actions in important portfolios, like the Dow Jones Sustainability Emerging Markets Index for the fourth consecutive year, also the MSCI Global Sustainability Index series also for the second consecutive year, and there is also some other important highlights of the company because for the 10th consecutive year, the company has been ranked amongst one of the 150 best companies to work for according to Exame Guide 2015. And even more importantly and also aligned to this new momentum, CPFL is among the 20 more innovative companies of Brazil according to the Best Innovator Award of 2015. And CPFL Energia was selected as the best practice of water risks management in the 2015 edition of the CDP in Latin America. So we are aligned to this new era, and CPFL is well acknowledged in the market. Now I'll go to page 4, so we give you some highlights about our sales. We mentioned a drop of 5.6, which is on the top corner of the slide, and we have our revenue in captive market. There was a drop of 5% in the volume sold, and in the free market, which is billed according to the use distribution system, that was a drop of 5.9%. But now looking at sales by consumption segment, we have a drop of 5.1% in the residential segment. This is the first time that we report such a drop in residential 5.9%, industrial 4.8%. And it's interesting to mention that this is certainly an important effect that reflects the increase in tariffs. And this has been incorporated by an actual increase that started as of March of this year. And this was an extraordinary tariff review, which was aggravated by all other tariffs. The market price did not change in the third quarter. Therefore, we still have for the industrial segment, the segment is leading our sales, followed by the residential segment, and there was 16% coming from the commercial segment. Another important aspect relates to contracted demand, and when we compare this quarter with the same period of 2014, what we see is a more rational utilization of power by clients. So the peak was reduced, but again, there was also a reduction off-peak, and this is very crucial when we consider the use of energy and the tariffs that have a higher incidence or higher amounts in the peak volumes. As a result of our sales, and unlike the usual run-of-the-mill operation, and also considering the significant participation of the industrial side, which is dropping more significantly, we have the Rio Grande do Sul area, which was more affected when compared to the other regions. Therefore, we see a more significant drop coming from concessionaries by region and throughout the country. In terms of the generation installed capacity, we have in the renewable side an increase of 5.7%, reaching 3,129. So all in all, we grew 1.3% this quarter, 1.2% this quarter. On page five, I would like to highlight what happened in the industrial segment in terms of production and consumption, industrial production, our accumulated growth rate in the last 12 months. I mean, consumption in terms of Brazilian industrial production, there was a very strong correlation of these two events, industrial consumption, industrial production. There has been a consistent drop since 2013, now reaching 5.3% of decrease in industrial consumption, whereas in industrial production, there was a drop of -6.5%. But if we look at the other chart on the right, there was a slight reaction in October, reaching our lowest position in the past few years, slightly below, 70%. It was 76.7%, and the average between 2008 and 2015 is 83.2%. The industrial confidence rate had a slight improvement, reaching 67.5%. Looking at the average for the past 7 years, is 102, and this somehow reflects all of the other indicators. On the right side chart, we see all the excessive inventories in the transformation industry. So capital goods is a matter of concern with 56%, especially related to infrastructure. Infrastructure was heavily impacted this year. But when you look at the other lines, consumer goods and intermediary goods, we also see the same behavior, meaning that our inventory levels are higher than expected. So this just reinstates all of the other elements that are linked to the drop in industrial consumption, which is lower than industrial production itself. So as we always do when we look at the full side of the glass, looking at the glass half full, here we have some important considerations. Currency devaluation, the dollar running at almost 4 reais, 3.80. But by the same token, we have a whole set of new opportunities. So there is an immediate effect on the profitability of the sectors with export coefficient, which is greater than the import coefficient. So this correlation that you see posted in the slide generating 6.7% of profitability index stemming from the depreciation of the exchange rate of 54% and affecting exports in 54, and we have just 10.4 in terms of in production costs. This gives room to some other segments that have a relevant stake in our company. We have paper and pulp and food. These are segments that are relevant, and they account for 20% of the total of the industry. These industries, in the short run, in view of this variation in exchange rate, they become much more competitive. And we've been monitoring some industries also going in the same direction. That's why it's important to mention, and we see this as something very positive. So in the short run, we believe that these two industry sectors should increase their consumption. Well, certainly there are some setbacks because they also have dollar-denominated debt. There are issues related to world demand. But according to our view, and this is something that we already saw in the consumption area, that these industries have a likelihood of increasing their volumes. But in the long run, the opportunities are more related to increases in imports, and the exchange rate works, you know, has a stake too. The import has been affected. The chemical and textile industries have been mostly affected, and in our portfolio, they account for 18% to 19%. And they could have been boosted because there is an idle capacity that could be filled out by the reduction in imports, according to what the chart shows. So this is something for us to monitor and follow up closely. This moves about 40% of CPFL's, you know, portfolio, and due to this particularly exchange momentum, they could be improved. And then moving to the next slide, we talk about delinquency. Delinquency increase not in percentage terms, but we see here the stability of this KPI is about 0.85. And the increase in the energy bills due to tariff increases that occurred in March, and also with our new tariff banner, the amounts increased to 188 million reals. Now, looking at Group B, which was more concerning to us, these refer to residential and commercial users. This month alone, there was a stagnation. Apparently, the peak was 98 million reals, with a slight reduction in the indicators related to billing indexes, you know, delinquency over 90 days. And so it seems to me that the situation is reaching a leveled position. And we look at the evolution of our allowance for doubtful accounts with old tariffs. The average was 20 million reals per quarter. Looking at the first quarters of 2013 until the current year, and due to the tariff increase in this third quarter, or in the second and third quarters, we achieve this volume, going from 20 million to 33 million reals. So this is certainly just a reinstatement that the absolute delinquency levels are not increasing. The average ticket of each delinquency number is increasing, but they are already considered here. But the company is really working hard, and this is something I already mentioned last quarter, but this, just to give you a number, when we look at the recovered revenue in the third quarter of 2014 was 3.18%, but now in the third quarter of 15, due to many cuts and other measures and other managerial measures to manage delinquency, we had a recovery, so 3.88% revenues in 12 months. And this allowed us to operate with the allowance for doubtful accounts level lower when compared to tariff increases. Now I go to page 8 just to give you some more details about our results. It's been a while since we've seen green results, both in terms of IFRS reported results as well as the managerial results that incorporates proportional consolidation of generation considered to consolidation of IFRS and the consolidation of sectorial financial assets and liabilities. Now we are referring to this quarter where the net revenue in IFRS increased 17.5%, reaching 703 million. Reported EBITDA increased by 25.7%, reaching 1.80 billion. And net income increased to reach 183 million. These are the reported amounts, and the recurring value, which is important for analysts, is a 21.9% growth in revenue, reaching 4,645,000. EBITDA results increased 7.6%, reaching 1.74 billion, and net income 33.7% increase, reaching 305 million. So in the, on the chart below, all we have is the breakdown of the proportional consolidation of generation, giving all of the considerations related to IFRS and sectorial financial assets and liability posted in 2014, and GSF and energy purchase from CPFL Geração and CPFL Renováveis. The amounts were lower, but we will talk about that and what are the solutions in the short run. So especially in the third quarter of 2015, both for EBITDA and net income, they are very small. So now I will break down the numbers of our results. I will initiate by the EBITDA. So looking on both sides, the variation of the result in IFRS and in terms of the recurring side of the company's business, we have the adjusted EBITDA. So on the left and right-hand side of the chart, we refer to the variation of regulatory assets, non-recurring, and proportional consolidation. And it's also important to mention the 999 million in the third quarter of 14 and 1.74 billion in the third quarter of 2015. And this is if we run an evaluation per segment and a conventional generation, we have a significant increase of 21.7%, meaning an additional 58 million reals. And now, especially speaking about consolidation, and you follow that last year, we were able to improve the performance of EPASA. This is our Northeast Thermoelectric Plan. We did a substantial work to update the plant. We performed some operating improvements. We did the overall 12,000 hours. We are consuming less fuel to produce power, electric energy, and there were lower effects. So the conventional generation result was positive. Now, speaking about distribution, despite the fact that the market is down, we were able to grow 8.3%. And leading this result, we had a Itaipu currency variation, which appears in the bottom part of our accounting, and that impacts EBITDA. And there was also an impact coming from the pass-through of PIS/COFINS of 14 million when we compare this result with the results from the same period of the year before. And then we will talk more about that 5.3% decrease in energy sales in the construction industry, which meant a loss of EBITDA of 12 million, also 5.8% increase in manageable PMSO. We were able to increase 21 million when compared to IPCE of 8.4%. So this increase is lower when compared to inflation rates. Allowance for doubtful accounts was 18 million, and collection actions is 4 million reals, and they are posted in the company's report. Legal and judicial indemnities amounted to 13 million reals. Therefore, distribution results is positive and mainly led, by EBITDA in view of the currency variation. In terms of the renewable generation, CPFL, CPFL Renováveis, we are speaking about a growth of 6.1% or 9 million reals. There are three items that are significant and that caused this improvement. These are expenses related to the association with DESA, which were better. There is also the insurer's indemnity right. In the case of TPP Biopedra, we had a problem with the machine, but everything was covered by insurance. So we were able to collect from the insurance company, and also the commercial startup of Morro dos Ventos 2. So we are 6% better than last year with 9 million reais. In terms of commercialization services and holding, we were down by 53.3% or 34 million. But in this regard, the main topic relates to a lower PLD. It was important last year, but if you look at the box down below, PLD in the third quarter of 2014 was 677 reais, and in this third quarter, 204 reals. So we do not have the burden from the generators. They were exposed. They are reduced. But on the other hand, we were not able to have more gains, which were higher last year on the seller side. So we are talking about a positive side. On the consolidated, there was an increase of 7.6%, a growth of 7.6%. And now on page 10, we've been talking to you about this ZBB deployment. We are implementing ZBB in terms of nominal adjusted figures. We are reporting now based on 3.5% recurrent expenses, you know, personnel, material, third parties and others, and in actual terms, we've been reporting from the very beginning of this operation a drop of 16.5% in our expenses. 1699 to 1409. And when we come in the 12-year comparison, there was a 4.5% drop year on year. And so particularly in distribution area, there was a drop in market, and this has been mitigated by an important decrease in our expenses. This is a significant drop, which just proves that the company is in the right direction when it deploy this new measurement. Now, in the next slide, we talk about net income for this quarter. Here, we will be looking at the recurring bars. There was an increase in the adjusted income of the company from to 305 million. Part of it was led by a 33.8% increase in EBITDA of 76 million. I already elaborated on that, and a 7% decrease in the negative net financial result of the company amounting to 24 million. So here we have a whole set of negative and positive effects. The main positive effect was the variation of Disco's concession financial assets. The report elaborates on that. It gives you more details about Piratininga's tariff adjustments and review, amounting to 146 million. There was a restatement of sectorial financial assets and liabilities, which we call CVA, amounting to 39 million. There was arrears of interest and fines and installment payments, and delinquency also had a positive effect because we were able to collect fines and do monetary collection amounting to 32 million. Mark-to-market effect, operations under law 4131, non-cash 33 million. And on the other hand, we have the negative effects, the main one being increases in CDI. More than 70% of our debt is pegged or indexed in CDI. On the right-hand side of the chart, you see a box. When you have CDI on the third quarter of 2014 was 11.6% a year, and this third quarter of 2015 is 14.7% a year. So it was almost a 4% increase. So this is also a result of the company's loans. And then we have Itaipu currency variation amounting to 97 million. So this is compensated by sectorial financial assets or revenue, PIS/COFINS on financial revenues or the cash position of the company, the new taxation of PIS/COFINS amounting to 19 million, and other positive effects amounting to 10 million reals. There are also two other additional examples, one being an increase in depreciation and amortization, you know, asset operations, an increase in distribution, and an increase of income tax and social contributions amounting to 18 million reais, given the general improvement in the general numbers of the company. So now I go to page 12 to report on our debt position. There was a slight drop. We are reporting net debt over EBITDA ratio 3.46, and now this just continues that approach that we mentioned before, talking about CVA's increase. CVA, you know, if you look down below on the chart, is 1,907,000,000, and if it were not for that, we would be running our net debt over EBITDA of 3 times. Which is the target of the company, a leverage of three. So the recurring EBITDA is 3981 with a 3.7 billion debt with a rating of 346. Cash balance is also affected because we would have 5,600,000 in cash if it were not for the significant increase of that green part of the chart, which is called CVA, in the second three, it was 3 billion, and in the first one at the year end was 1.9, and now is 1.907 billion. I mean, this is an important number because now the company is collecting from the tariff adjustments, and therefore we are able to resume, you know, previous figures. From this 1.907, 497 refers to Piratininga's CVA due to adjustments that were put into effect on October 22nd, and now we are, you know, reinstating our cash with that new figure. The other slide, page 13, we have the debt profile is led by CDI with 74% of nominal cost is 12.2 in the quarter, and the actual cost around 2%. The important thing to mention is that our net cash position in the company, 3.7, covers 1.7 times short-term amortization. So this is a comfortable position. The average tenor of the debt has a cost of, in the short term, 12.4%, and the average tenor is 3.51 years. So, speaking about the reservoirs, I only have our current situation. We hope to come to the end of the month of November with 26.5%, and this confirms our predictions that we expressed early this year. I mean, this is even a better number. This is a good piece of news because all of the rational risks are put aside. If you look at the lower part of the chart, I mean, it has been raining more in the dry season rather than in the wet season in terms of, you know, LTA figures. In 2013, we had 102% of LTA in the year, 14.68. And in 2015, we are improving our situation in the last 12 months to 78% in the southeast. And now if we look at the linked system, we refer to the southeast because of its contribution, and we refer to the south because most of our levels are in the south, and this affects the cost of GSF in the plant and other secondary things related to the plant. But in 2013, we were in keeping with the LTA. And last year we had 82%, and there's a significant improvement to 109% in a dry season, reaching 78 in the first months of 2015. This is very good, and it seems like we will have better days ahead. On page 15.
We'll make a comparison now on page 15, a comparison of the volumes for the year. As you can see, the top curve, that first estimate, the blue curve is the CPFL curve, And we have variations that now are decreasing when we compare the value by ONS and their estimate in November is of a decrease of minus 1.5, and CPFL is working in the blue curve. We estimate that the reduction in consumption in 2015 as compared to 2014 is approximately 2%. But there is a reduction in the differences along the year, and this could mean something positive. Now I go on to page 16 to talk about perspectives. And at the end of October with 28.8, and those 26 that we had mentioned before in the closing of November, we have three curves that can be seen. We tried to put the curve with 100% in the blue curve, which is at 80% of LTA, which is even above the one that we had in 2014, and a more probable curve of 90% of LTA with a thermal dispatch of 70%. Just to show you the following, the dotted red curve is from 2007 to 2014. We have the opportunity to close above the average. We had a normal curve during the summer, and we will be close to the average with 90% of LTA. So I would say that we have to hope that we will be close to this curve. This is an important reestablishment, because as this happens, there will be the need to dispatch with less thermal capacity, the cost of energy drops, and the effect of the price, which reduced consumption, might go back and prevail, and we will have a better expectation for growth in this demand. Page 17, to give you further details in what we call hydrological risk renegotiation, two important events are mentioned here, the first of which is the provisionary measure, and it has to do with a committee in the Congress, and it was submitted and has to be approved. It has already been sent to the Senate. It has been read already, and we believe and expect that, according to the schedule of the Senate, that next week we will have this approved. On the other side, we have the reports by the agency. It's the fourth review of that hearing. So the proposal in ACR regulated market is up to 100% with a payment of a premium. So there are three conditions here that were established in such a way as to give greater flexibility of options. Obviously, this should bring two agents that were hired at the ACR different prices. And these three options, according to our evaluation, will give us a important adhesion, and in the case of CPFL, it accounts for most of our contracts for our generators. As we had mentioned before, the text was approved in the revision of ANEEL, and the current text is now going through Senate and will enable the agency to sign these amendments by the 14th, and this will be declared until December the 4th. Our position is quite favorable here as to what was shown. On the other side, in the ACL, the free market, we need a hedge to mitigate the hydrological risks, and this has been reported. We really need to define the regulations to hire reserve energy. This is what is missing. It will be approved, these PNs, and we're still waiting for further details. The agents will wait for that. This is not the main case for CPFL. We have contracts, yes, but there are few for ACL, less than 10%. So in our case, what is really applicable and what is interesting in terms of cash results is the option that we did in the ACR, the regulated market. So the next step is the approval by Senate, probably next week, the ANEEL regulation, by the agency. We are working in analysis and internal approvals according to the options presented, but we have already expressed that we are very satisfied with the proposals related to ACR, the regulated market. Page 18, the fourth tariff review cycle for Piratininga. Very briefly, you can see in the box the final results of the tariff review. What is important is to monitor the EBITDA down here, the regulatory EBITDA. We go from 239 million. It is updated, adding 41, and with a review of the shelf life, it goes to 291. This is the expected result for the company. As the company invests in its network, and there is an increase in investment that produces 132 million that is added to the regulatory EBITDA, and we deduce the depreciated assets. So the company has invested more than the depreciated assets. And we show the improvement recognized by the agency according to the inclusion of special obligations. So we went from an EBITDA in the third portfolio of 291, and now we come to 354 million. With this, parcel B has an increase by 5.31% as of 717 million to 755 million. So our consideration is positive, and this is the first thing we see. So closing this presentation on page 19 and 20, just reminding you of the sustainability performance, which is an important topic in a very important year because of COP21. Now in December, the company is in the Dow Jones Emerging Markets, and this is for the fourth consecutive year now. 92 companies based in 14 emerging countries. So this list has given to the best performance in sustainability worldwide. We're very proud of that. And for the second year consecutive, MSCI owns more than 500 indexes, and we have the highest ESG standards in its respective sectors. And the four most important awards we had as best company to work at, that was for the 14th year in a row, the best in 2015 by Época Negócios of the 20 most innovative companies in Brazil, and also water risk management, selected the best practice by CDP, the Carbon Disclosure Project. CPFL was elected as the best practice in water management, and also Impact Awards, which is an association of SAP system operators. They evaluated the success cases. CPFL ranked first place using the case Telemediação do Grupo A, Programa Tauron, connected to the Smart Read program that we implemented in the whole of Group A. This is already known by the market, and now we are working for Group B. These were the considerations. Together with my team, I'll be open to any questions that investors and analysts might have. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1. To remove it from the list, press star 2. The first question, Marcus Severini, JP Morgan. Good morning, Wilson. I have some questions, the first of which, expectations for 2016 based on electricity consumption. This year, we saw until November a drop in the market, a total of 1.5, residential 0.5, industrial minus 4.1, and commercial, on the positive side, 1.1. At the same time, we estimate a drop in the GDP quite strongly of 3%. If we go back to the past 2001 during the rationalization, we saw the GDP dropping less and a consumption dropping around 18 to 20%, considering that the rationalization was not throughout the year. When I look at these figures and this level of the decrease of the GDP, if we had the same conditions as in the past
probably it would have been weaker. So my question is, haven't we reached maybe the lowest level in the electricity consumption, and maybe 2016 will be flat consumption as compared to 2015, even if we have a negative GDP, 1.6, 1.5. These are the figures that the market has been working with. And my question is, depending on the second semester of next year and some recovery and even a drop in tariffs, if the hydrological scenario is confirmed, maybe the commercial segment and the residential segment might have greater consumption, giving us a surprise and a stronger demand in the market than what we see today. That's my first question. So the GDP, which is negative 3 this year, consumption dropping to 1.5%. So how do you see consumption in 2016 due to that? And my second question, if you allow me, is in relation to growth perspectives. I think we have a very important new event, which is privatization in the electrical sector, not only in terms of distribution, but also generation. It was not imagined some months ago. When we look forward and we see a situation for states and municipalities which is complicated, maybe 2016 might still be a difficult year in a sector that has a very strong state presence, not only in the federal scope, but also in the state scope. In Rio Grande do Sul, where you have an important distributor, you have C3E distribution, NGT, Selex, Copel, Semig, and so on. So there are a number of assets that could come to the market, and the word privatization is not so sinful any longer, and everyone is talking about it. What do you think about it? Do you think we're headed that way? Do you think that we might go into this privatization wave? I would like to hear your opinion on that. Thank you. Perfect. Thank you for your questions. First, in relation to the consumption topic, I think that what you think is what we think. We have been working in 2016 slightly in positive terms. We're talking about flat, 0.4% right now. We believe that it's the same thing what you mentioned, especially in the residential sector. We believe that people are losing a little bit of their comfort to do energy management due to the price. The unit consumption is still the lowest one, the lowest of the lowest. It's a record low. We had resumed the same figures of 2001 after the rationalization. 1.5 years ago, we're slightly below that because people have more appliances at home. They have mobiles. They have high-end televisions and computers, which is equipment they did not have before. So we're talking about rationalization and time of use of these pieces of equipment, and obviously that's impacted by the price. So as we have an improvement in hydrology and a reduction in flags, possibly people will resume their previous behavior because they do have more equipment at home than they had in the past. So obviously this will happen. On the other side, you see in the industry, if you look at the scenario and the drop of production that we have just shown, considering the demand behavior, there is only a rationalization. The demand continues to grow with new ventures. Obviously, the increase is not so big, but we have seen, in addition to what I would call some notable cases, on average, what is happening is only rationalization from the peak to off-peak. So we are trying to improve the process, and I believe the industry. And this is why I wanted to mention, 40% of the portfolio here has a perspective today that is different from what was 6 months ago because of the exchange rate change. Obviously, an improvement in the residential segment and something in the industrial segment, if we have some kind of public policy, which will mitigate or minimize the unemployment condition, the commercial sector will also accompany that. Now, due to the GDP perspective, we have been working with a GDP not of 3% like you mentioned, it's much lower, of 1.5% and drop of next year. But we have not seen a drop in energy as would be expected. So just to ramp up, our expectation is that yes, we will be slightly positive next year and we might have an upside considering a change in climate, which is not priced here, but can surprise us positively. On the other hand, in relation to privatization, and this is a personal opinion, I agree with you. I think because of the crisis, it is affecting not only the federal government, but also the state government, and it's easy to understand. I was talking to journalists the other day. What people have cut are things that we call that are superfluous and excess, usually things that have taxes included. The essential things, especially food, the results that come from recent policies don't have a burden, or at least the taxation was reduced. That's why the states feel more whenever you have this kind of decrease that has a greater impact. It seems the economy has come as a decrease of 3%, but the state budget has a decrease by 6% because the products that have lower consumption were the ones that had a higher taxation. So obviously, there is very little to be done in the states. Through time, I think they have become more efficient. It's always possible, just like companies. Costs are just like nails. You've got to pay attention and always cut them. But I'm sure that some states, now that they have renewed their concessions, will consider, and they should consider, the possibility of privatization. There is a concession, a renewal, that was renewed by 30 years. It could be operated in a more efficient way, and the state can not only have a short-term solution for this cash, but also a performance improvement and collect more taxes. This is what happened to most of the states that privatized. And since this is not a sinful word anymore, maybe this is one of the few solutions in the short term to face this decrease in the budget. I'm pretty sure that with the leadership of Electrobras and with the sale of these concessions or the renewal of these 29 power plants, I think this is a road that will be chosen. And it is important to monitor that, because of its improvements and the attractiveness for foreign investors for these assets. Because on the other hand, the high exchange rate does favor the acquisition of these assets, so there will be more people interested, even foreigners interested in these assets as of now. So I do think this is a scenario that should be considered, and it's almost basic right now. That's true. We have the exchange rate. Thank you very much, Wilson. Thank you, Severin. Our next question, Kaiki Vasconcelos, Citibank. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the call. We saw a leverage that dropped 3.5 and the net debt and the EBITDA, but there will be a future drop, but we will have better results in the Renovado and CVAs. But considering the market nowadays, that last year to keep cash, the company had dividends in the second and third quarter. What is the payout for this year? Do you have any view for that? Or will you wait? GSF and hydrology scenario, can you address this, these two points? Thank you. Thank you, Kaiki, for your question. Just to make it clear, at the beginning of the year, it's not that we did not pay, but we had bonus. We still offered shareholders the possibility of a bigger payout. Obviously, we're coming to the end of a cycle, and I think the result of this quarter shows this. it seems that we have come to the limit of the CVA commitment. It will reverse now. That's the trend. And the cash position of the company will be improved maybe in 1 year. So it is important to have this reversal sign. As you mentioned quite well, we do have the hydrology issue. We have been studying, and we will address that in the board in future meetings. But the recommendation of the company is still to be cautious, waiting for these two events. The GSF event is very important. Of improving the results of the generator and in a consolidated terms for CPFL Energia. We will evaluate this improvement and this decision based on the options that we have had. This will take place in next days. So this is part of the agenda of the board. We believe that we will be able to share a decision on dividends and how they're going to be done as of early next year. Thank you very much. Our next question, Arlindo de Carvalho, Credit Suisse. Actually, it's Vinicius who's speaking. Wilson, my question has to do with the two previous ones. We see the auction of the concessions, the matured concessions, and think this is an acquisition opportunity that could be interesting. And the NEL is not indicating the renewal for all distributors. There are many companies with a complicated financial situation. And now you are at a point that we cannot say that it is a calm period because the debt shows that and the share bonus, but you're more in a defensive position than you were in the past. But there are also opportunities. I would like to know about the company's planning in terms of when the market changed, there were fewer opportunities for expansion and with low taxes. It was a bullish market. So how do you think about offsetting the balance of the company, paying dividends? Will there be an increase in capital with all of these opportunities in the future? What is the rationale nowadays? Will you keep this defensive posture stance, or will these opportunities really allow a more aggressive position of the company? Vinicius, right now, I think the year was important because of that. This is a characteristic of the company, financial discipline. So we act in a preventive way in terms of pre-funding shares. That's why we have a comfortable situation of liquidity, even though there is a stress on the cash. We were submitted to that, and so were other distributors in terms of CVA and so on. What we've seen right now is a reversal of this, is the beginning of a reversal process that will happen in the variation vis-a-vis establishing the cash in a time period of over 1 year. On the other hand, you are right. We do imagine that there is a set of players that were not able to resist as CPFL, and opportunities will come by. We have this characteristic of discipline to create value. So obviously, we have to be prudent and keep to a healthy limit. And now in a leverage of the economy, which is not one of the best periods we've had, we are always assessing things along the lines of the businesses we are focused on distribution, generation, and all of these opportunities. But they will have to allow not only the creation of value, and this has always been our great indicator, but to, if they're made possible, they will be made possible according to leverage limits that are below 3.5 times more. We always work, and we never hid that from the market. We believe that to operate in a leveraged way, in a cautious way, this creates value for the company and the tax shield that these operations allow us, but in a way that we have control of it. So the company operating the 3.5 times the EBITDA, we are detached from this position today, and the reason is well known by you. that is the use of CVA, and something that we did not mention, but it gives a more space for leverage, is the reversal of GSF. These values, since the options we've had and were recognized through the month of December, and we have been monitoring that, there is a set of operations that can be done. And we should highlight the following. There are transactions that can be done and that can even improve things. You said that it's not a leveraged company in the consolidated, but it could bring a benefit to the company. We will be cautious because we believe that to grow is a way of creating value for the company. We are permanently assessing that. We have a specialized area inside the company that assesses all that. But yes, we will keep being cautious. We were throughout the year. We're still going through. Maybe we're in the middle of this crisis, maybe a little bit beyond the middle, so we still need to be cautious and to analyze and be careful with the financial situation of the company. Okay, you were very clear. Thank you. Our next question, Miguel Rodriguez, Morgan Stanley. Good morning, Wilson. I would like you to mention the process of renewal for the company and for the players in general. Could you also mention the parameters established by ANEEL? At what level do you expect these parameters to encourage the consolidation process? Still on this topic, could you mention the strategy of the company throughout this process? How do you plan to position yourselves? What kind of assets will you prioritize? Large concessions or more concessions of a smaller size, and also the geographical position? Thank you. Hello, Miguel. I will give the floor now to Elio Puccini, that is the Director of Regulatory Issues and Distribution. He has been here with us in all the events related to the evolution of the proposal of the agency. I will ask him to give his comments, and then I will comment on your question. Good morning. The process was addressed in a public hearing by ANEEL. There were two phases. They reported and gave several possibilities to discuss this amendment, and for us, in our opinion, it brings a lot of progress of the neutrality of Parcel A. There are rules of governance that reinforce the governance of the contract. And we are at the final period. We are now being asked to sign the contract. I think we're going to sign it by the 8th of December. We have received, and they have already been published, and we are receiving these invitations to sign. So the perspective is that in the next 30 days, all of the concession contracts will be signed. Our perspective, the minutes made available, is a very positive variation considering the strong interaction ANEEL proposed, and so did the ministry, in defining the minutes of the amendment. What is important in terms of the indicators that you mentioned of the service quality and also of the indicators for financial health, and both of them, our situation is quite comfortable. Only one of the concessionaries in the improvements is now below, or theoretically above, the limit established, the DEFSEC, in 5 years. But that is very slight. We do believe that we will overcome this in terms of quality. And like I said, there is only one issue in all those five concessionaries. In one of them, we do have challenges, and we have 5 years to solve that. So definitely, nothing concerns us in terms of quality, but in terms of the financial health indicators, even less. According to our evaluation, none of them have an additional challenge as to what the company would do regardless of this rule. So we're feeling quite comfortable here. We were naturally evaluating the quality demands, but the company and these concessionaries are already a benchmark by the agency in terms of technical, operating, and financial performance. In terms of the speculation that you mentioned of the concessions and the possibility I always said that the company, considering a growth strategy and distribution, the concessions that have greater difference, that means they create more value, are the small concessions close to the areas of concession that we already own. Obviously, there are some options. There are small concessionaries within our concessionaries. There are mid-sized concessionaries also around that. If we analyze in terms of preference, according to the work that will be done and the results that can be offered and the time it will take place, these are the best ones. Today, a model that I would say is using information systems and so on. The geographical issue is a variable. I believe it's good. But it's not something that will hinder things if the concessionary does not have a good performance. The preference is for the size, and obviously, if it's not next to it, it has to be close to what we have. This is the second point. Out of the 40 concessions that are being renewed, 42 concessions, I think now, as was mentioned here in December, there will be this option. And as of this point, according to what we said before in one of the answers, in relation to an option or that the government makes, in this case, it's the municipalities. In terms of privatization, we will pay attention to that, and we will be able to assess carefully these preferences. Obviously, the smaller ones or the ones close to us or inside are the best ones, and the bigger ones and the ones close to them are the second option, and we have to evaluate all the others. We're paying attention to everything. Thank you very much for your answers. Our next question, Pedro Manfredini, Itaú BBA. Good morning, Wilson. Good morning, everyone. I have a question still in terms of growth strategy, thinking about M&A, greenfields, and other options that might come up for CPFL in other areas. You talked a lot about leverage, and what limits you to do acquisitions in the short term or to grow in the short term. But when we look at it, CPFL also could have a partner, could have a smaller stake, but always thinking and working with a partner in a consortium. We've seen that you chose this position in the past. This possibility was expressed. If there is an opportunity both in terms of generation and distribution. So that's my first question. The second one, we've seen some major companies in the sector selling some assets, not so important assets, to be able to have greater cash in the short term so they can maybe make another more relevant acquisition, and it would make sense, tactically speaking. CPFL could go through that? In terms of assets that make more sense to the company, you think they could also sell? You could also sell assets in terms of generation to have cash for this kind of acquisition. Is that a possibility? These are the two questions in relation to growth. Thank you. I will start by the last question. Obviously, in selling assets, generation assets, that you can ensure the value you had, obviously it could be an option. It's not the preferred option of the company. But in receiving an exceptional offer for an asset that you can realize all the value you would have with time, definitely, this is an option that could be taken into consideration. If this were a reality, it's not a reality, but I want to make it clear that this is something that we would evaluate as a company. to have this second and better movement, to have a new perspective, to create value, having realized the value of the first one. As always, in the generation area, we always work with partners. If it's a greenfield work, this is a company strategy to share risks. This is something that we will definitely continue to do. There is, in some assets, such as Serra da Mesa, we have a partner, a public partner. That was an acquisition that was done together. And we have an excellent relation with our partners. So this definitely could be a scenario of a bigger acquisition. We could partner up with someone if we had that capacity to feel that this partnership would come around. We don't have any kind of prejudice in relation to that. We do have high-producing partners. We have state partners. We have federal partners. And when the company forges a partnership with members in which we feel that we can operate and maintain that asset in better conditions, the company will use this alternative as we have always done. So like I mentioned, I think there is a big set of, and there will appear as of the renewal of the concessions, a set of alternatives. To make that possible, if there's the possibility of value creation, and to make it possible, if we have to sell an asset which is not that relevant for the company, to use the resources to give the second step, the strategy of the company will assess that, and if it is interesting, we will do it. Thank you. And a last question that has nothing to do with M&A, but it has to do with the distributors. Have you noticed in recent months any kind of take-or-pay reduction of industrial clients in your TUSD? Is it something? I think this has been negotiated by some of the key clients in your concession. If you just could give us an idea if this is something that is happening or not. What has happened is what we reported, we showed in the report. There is a reduction in the operation shift. There is a preference in an operation to take energy from the peak that is more expensive and migrate it to the off-peak. There is a change in profile in relation to the blue tariff and going to the green tariff. Is that what he said? From blue to green. Of the total of the demand, it grows slightly, but in the demand at the peak, it has decreased, and the off-peak has increased, exactly as is shown in the presentation. We have the breakdown in the report. Thank you, Wilson.
Our next question from Marcel Ossé from UBS. In the auction, A-1 auction, what do you think about that preset price of 149? Do you think that is a low price, high price? Could you please elaborate a bit about the energy demand for the auction, and what is your expectation for power in 2016 and for the next 3 to 4 years? So, Marcelo, I'll give the floor to Daniel. Daniel is our operating officer on the seller side. Well, the A1 auction price, it's lower than the market price. So this may difficult the it may be more difficult for people to enter the auction. So maybe some people may make the decision to sell at this price, anticipating some further decreases in a long-term horizon. So this is a three-year term. This is the contract, but there are also other products, and the prices are different. I missed the second part of your question. What was the demand that you may anticipate for the auction, and what will be the price expectation for 2016? In terms of the auction demand, is about 1,000 megawatt average. Now, prices for 2016, looking at the free market is about at 170 reals for megawatt hour. But for the auction, we do not have a very specific expectation. What about long-term pricing? The prices are not much lower than that. When you look at 2017 and 18, prices range between 150 to 155 reals, and this can be maintained in the long run. Thank you. Next question from Carolina Carneiro from Santander. Good afternoon. We know that there are many variables that have to be taken into account, but do you have any expectation of a further tariff increases for 2016, particularly in the case of Paulista? Thank you. In the case of Paulista in 2016, the only thing that we can anticipate is the annual adjustment. It's not a tariff review. It's just, you know, a compliance with the parameters, but we do not anticipate any surprises. Just as with Piratininga and the other companies, what will be relevant will be the incorporation of the CVA regulatory asset. But on the other hand, we also anticipate the anticipation of the quotas trying to mitigate part of that. And if there is any improvement in the hydrological landscape, I mean, Paulista is in April, then we see an outlook for the other companies. Okay, perfect. I just wanted to know whether you have any expectation in terms of tariff adjustments. No, not at the moment. Right, thank you. So I have a second question. Do you have any preventive measures? I mean, through preventive measures, we were able to hold down further losses. But for 2016, do you think we could expect the maintenance of all of the procedures that were implemented to mitigate this possible increase in the losses? I just want to have an idea of what the situation will be for next year. You can expect, because when it comes to allowance for doubtful debt, especially in moments like this, we have to maintain the same measures. Otherwise, things may get out of hand. I don't know if you look at our reports, but I mentioned that page. Let me see if I can find it. There was reference on page 7. I refer to that 318, the revenue that we recovered in 3.88 in 2015. So 314, 318 and 388. The difference we would have had of only 0.7% of additional collection, we would have 150 million in the quarter alone. In addition of 150 million, it will be an increment of 150 million in the quarter. That's why I reinstate the fact that this is a priority topic for us. We may have additional costs of 4 to 5 million, an increment of 4 to 5 million per quarter. We were able to prevent an increment in delinquency of 150 million. Okay, thank you very much. We would now like to conclude the question and answer session. I would like to turn the floor back to Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr. for his final remarks. I would like to thank you very much for participating in this call with us, and I would like to highlight a few more aspects. In the first presentations of the year, I said that we had a very robust regulatory agenda that had to be pursued. And one of the things was tariff banners and update of value, the extraordinary increases in tariffs. I mean, there was also a topic related to improvements in tariff review in the fourth cycle or maybe some other way. You remember there was still something pending related to the reconciliation in 2014. There were two pending parcels. And in that environment, we still experience the renewal in the distribution, in the distribution area. And also we talked about GSF. And I must tell you that by looking at your reports, I think that by this year end, our outlook is quite different from now on. You know, in terms of the regulatory system, and once GSF is concluded, this industry will go through an upgrade in regulatory terms. All of the actions, maybe they are not materialized and the timing we want, but, I mean, of course, there are many interests at stake and consumers, but I would just like to reinstate how responsible and diligent the government is operating, meaning through the government or some regulatory agencies. They are very diligent in dealing with this topic. So next year, all of these topics will be resolved. And then we have some good outlooks. One thing that I think concerns you is the market outlook. Our view, even considering the worst-case scenario when we see a further, you know, decline of the economy, we may be positively surprised. And on the other hand, we're, now we have very low unit per-unit consumption. People are making more efficient use of economy, but there are other segments of the economy that may resume their growth path given this new exchange rate landscape. On the other hand, it's also important to mention something that was mentioned during the call, which are the opportunities. For a company like ours, which have a robust strategy and large number of assets, we've always mitigated everything with a very stringent financial discipline. I mean, we try to generate value, but we will do what is necessary, recognizing the current moment, but value creation must occur in due time, as it should be done by a company of our size. Each step of the company or each part of the company should be able to share not only this discipline by value creation, but we will be prudent, but we understand that the regulatory landscape and the way the company, on the one hand, managed its costs appropriately, and on the other hand, also appropriately managing its financial obligations with leverage, we may be considered a player that will certainly find opportunities to generate value. Obviously, we always believe that given this scenario of uncertainty in terms of the economy, we hope that, I mean, the country should be placed ahead of anything else. But as Brazilians, now we hope to see a positive outlook, which is what this country deserves, and we will be prepared to take that opportunity. And I thank you very much for joining us today. CPFL's Energy Audio Conference is completed for today. Thank you very much, and have a very good afternoon.